I'm Vermont Edition producer Sam Gale Rosen. This podcast has been edited for clarity and brevity. Thanks for listening.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. With weeks, days even, remaining in the 2018 legislative session, lawmakers and the Scott administration are at loggerheads over education funding. The governor has made it very clear that he does not support new taxes or higher established taxes, like the property tax. At town meeting day in March, citizens largely voted in support of their school budgets, which had a property tax increase already built in. But the governor wants to relieve the burden on homeowners who, despite supporting their school budgets, often feel squeezed. So last week, he unveiled a plan to keep taxes level for the next 5 years. This would require shrinking school staff and other cost-saving measures. But in the immediate term, his plan would also use nearly $60 million in one-time funds to keep tax rates from rising in fiscal year 2019. The governor's plan was met with what can generously be called skepticism by lawmakers in the House and Senate, but the governor remains undeterred.
I'm sure there's skepticism. There's always skepticism. That's what we're here for. But we have to do our job and make sure that we educate them and show them the path that we think is appropriate. And I think we owe it to taxpayers and Vermonters to take the time we need to make sure that we're spending the money wisely and we're not on this unsustainable path. Because the option is, you just if you raise the tax rate this year and don't do anything to control the costs, we'll be back again next year with another tax rate increase.
That's Governor Scott speaking at a press conference last Thursday. We're going to talk about the plan today and the tension between key lawmakers and the governor. Joining me for this discussion are House Education Chair Dave Sharp and Budget Commissioner Adam Gresham. Thanks to both of you for being with us today.
Thanks for inviting me.
Yeah, it's good to be here.
So, Commissioner Gresham, can we start in a very simplistic way before we get into the details? And I want to just have you illuminate what you see as the problem that the administration is attempting to solve. As I said, we'll get into all the details, but at the crux, what's the problem you're trying to solve?
Well, to go back to what listeners just heard the governor say, we face a $58 million property tax increase this year. And the governor has been very clear from the beginning of the session to the end of the session and everywhere in between that he will not accept that tax increase. So the initial or the immediate problem is a way to close the gap in the education fund between the sources of revenue at current tax rates and the need for revenue, the need for to meet school budgets that were voted in past this past March.
So, Representative Sharp, do you agree fundamentally that that is a tension point and that there needs to be something done to solve that?
So we have worked on problems that we perceive exist in our school system, some of which are connected to the amount of money that school district spends. In particular, we've looked at special ed funding, and we've looked at the construction consolidation of school districts over the last, both of which have taken somewhere in the vicinity of 6 to 9 years to bring to full fruition. To perceive a problem and to, you know, throw something on the table that purports to fix it in 1 year seems extraordinarily difficult.
So, in other words, the fact that property taxes are rising in fiscal year 2019 may not be ideal, but is not something that needs to be solved in the immediate term. You see a long-term fix coming, and the fact that property taxes are still rising right now is okay.
Let's be clear that most of the reason for the increase this year was the fact that we poured one-time money into actually reducing property tax rates last year. We reduced both the penny rate and the income rate for Vermont, artificially reduced them last year, so that it's the credit card way of running government. You put money on the credit card last year. This year we have to pay it off. The bulk of the $58 million is money that we put into the Ed Fund, one-time money we put into the Ed Fund to reduce tax rates last year. Voters across the state, school boards across the state, are doing their jobs. They brought in budgets I think, a little over 1.5%, and on a per pupil basis at 0.7%. They're being extraordinarily responsible. Voters voted for those budgets despite the fact that they knew that that was going to increase their property taxes, and it turns out that they're willing to support quality schools in their communities. Why the legislature thinks that the administration thinks that we have to tear $300 or $400 million out of public education in order to satisfy taxpayers at this point is surprising to me, and I think it's a death knell for public education.
That's a really strong statement, and I want to come back to that because that's something that is a little bit like throwing out a grenade and waiting for it to go off. So let's come back to that while we have while it's ticking. But Commissioner Gresham, this question of things happening right now versus having the legislature, having the administration have time to work things out. I understand the governor has said, "I don't want to see taxes raised," and that is a firm line. On the other hand, he didn't come out with this proposal until recently. I know there were memos stating, here's some approaches that I'd be supportive of that he put out at the beginning of the session. But this substantial proposal is very late. Why not take this up next year? Yes, taxes would rise this year, but people already voted in support of their school budgets. So why the imperative to do it right now when it would seem very clear from the get-go that you're not going to get the support of the legislature?
I think that's a good question. But first of all, let me start out by saying that, there is, I would guess, a disagreement between the legislature and the administration. I mean, the gap we have in the education fund is not due to throwing one-time funds at it last year only. The fact is we have a gap there because we have structural inefficiencies in our system of education, a system that really was built and currently stands to serve over 100,000 students, and currently we don't even have 80,000 students. There's been a sharp decline over the years in the number of students we have, and so we're delivering a product for students that aren't there, and that's one major reason why we have a gap in the funding. But
it a gap, you just mean a property tax rise.
That's correct. But to answer your question, the governor came out in January with a letter to the legislature that listed a set of ideas, over a dozen ideas. Many of those ideas had been circulating in the building for years. In fact, Representative Sharp and I, when we sat on the same committee, we debated those ideas from time to time. So, much of what the governor has presented, which we'll get into in a second, are not new ideas. So they have been around. But importantly, they were presented back in January. And the governor's plan is really putting many of those ideas together, in some cases adding some seasoning, in other cases not, into a cohesive and coherent plan. And the governor said early and often that he would not stand for a tax increase or a fee increase. And the question was often asked, does that include property taxes? And the answer was always, yes, it does include property taxes. So we've asked the legislature from early on to work with us to make the property tax hike go away and to work within the education system to make that happen. And, that just didn't happen. And by the end of the session, it became clear. So, yes, it is late in the session, but this plan was presented and ideas were presented quite early on.
But the legislature didn't go for them.
But that doesn't mean that the governor's statement months ago that he wouldn't stand for a property tax hike should just go away. I mean, he was serious in what he said. And, Jane, also, let's make sure we realize that we're talking about a lot of money here. This is $58 million of property taxpayer money. And if you think about that, the cost of a legislative session, a week in the legislature, is about $400,000. So you'd have to extend the legislative session about 2.5 years for the Vermont taxpayer to come out behind. So we're not talking about an unreasonable proposition here.
Right, because the legislature, if this is going to continue moving forward, the legislature would have to stay past its closure date or the date it was supposed to be ending, and that costs money. And so that's been one of the questions here.
Correct. But we're not thinking it's going to take weeks. I mean, many of these issues, like I said, have been circulating for a long time. I think we could come to agreement and go home.
You know, Representative Sharp, it does seem like the legislature has known from the start that Governor Scott would not go for a tax hike. And it can be said that he didn't come out with a fully fleshed out plan until very late. But it is not really accurate to say, you know, that these ideas were not in circulation and that the legislature didn't have a heads up that this was not going to pass muster with the governor.
So we took that memo seriously, that sort of brainstorming ideas, putting ideas on the table, some of which, you know, like the $17,000 per pupil notion of moving back to the foundation formula, you know, which created the lawsuit that created Act 60 in 1997. I don't think there was any appetite for going that far back in history to recreate a system that the Supreme Court found illegal in the first place. On the other hand, what we have done as a legislature over quite a number of years is look for where are there problems in this system. And so when we created Act 46, we heard this mantra from limited number of people saying, we spend too much, we spend too much, we spend too much. And so as a part of Act 46, we had a study done by a reputable outfit that's done studies in over 20 states in terms of what they refer to as adequacy. You know, are we spending the right amount of money in education? Are we spending too much or not enough? And they came back with a report. This is several years ago. They came back with a report that said we spend roughly the right amount of money in K-12 education. Roughly the right amount of money in K-12 education. We spend $30 million too much in administration. And we spend $140 million too much in special ed. So we took that seriously. And we commissioned further studies. And in Act 46, we've already seen administrative costs come down. We've seen teaching staff reduced. And we've seen progress in that regard. With regard to special education, we had a study done on our funding formula, and we commissioned an outfit to come in and help school districts figure out best practices around special education. The funding program report said we could save $70 or $80 million in special education if we incorporated the best practices found in the consultation with local school districts about how to deliver special education services. And we just passed unanimously on the floor of the House a special education bill that works in that direction. But that takes years to get there. What else? The third priority that the administration put on the table was ratios. So we have had, as Representative – I call him Representative Gresham because we served together on the Ways and Means Committee. But as Commissioner Gresham pointed out, we had a ratio discussion a number of years ago in the Ways and Means Committee, and it was extraordinarily complicated and difficult to move forward on. And we decided at that time that there were other things that were more doable and more appropriate in the tax structure in terms of trying to contain education costs. And we postponed any action on ratios. So the governor comes forward and he says, you know, we need to save $300 million and we're going to do it with changing ratios from where they are now to 5.15 to 1 and 5.4 to 1 and then 5.75 to 1 of selected groups of staff members. And we took testimony on that. That is extraordinarily difficult, and you just don't plop that down and have, you know, rural districts with small elementary schools and tuitioning their high school students. You don't put the same parameters on them as you do on a large urban school, which has economies of scale. And so we are willing to move forward. We looked at that, and I think that you'll see before the end of the session, we'll put some further work on ratios, and we will examine that, and maybe in a few years, we'll actually come forward with a solid proposal that moves us in the right direction with regard to ratios. But my committee, the Education Committee, is not accustomed to just throwing proposals on the table that seem on their face unrealistic.
Burlington GOP Committee Chair Paco DeFrancis emailed in to say, "I've read the governor's plan and I'm disappointed in its proposed use of one-time money. I'm even more disappointed in House and Senate leadership's inability to craft policy that will create near-term cost containment and savings. Why can't the legislature claw back the entire $58 million education fund deficit from school districts? In the event of a funding deficit, the state has the right and the responsibility to claw back funds to responsibly balance school expenses." Representative Sharp, can you clarify for me? We hear often in this conversation a gap or a deficit. I mean, these funds are accounted for in the sense that if nothing happens, nothing changes, property taxes would rise. But that was what was voted on at town meeting day, right?
Yeah, that's correct. To refer to it as a gap or is I don't know, a little bit odd. The way that it has worked for the entire time I've worked in been in the legislature is that voters vote a budget. And that affects local tax rates. We have modified the connection between exactly what they vote and exactly what their tax rate changes over the years. We've fiddled with Act 60 in one way or another. We've put constraints in place, but the basic structure is still there. It actually was there before Act 60. You vote a budget. The way the education system works is you vote a budget, you add up all the budgets that are voted, and you divide it by the property value, and you get a rate. And that's the way it still works. Budgets are reduced to a certain extent by an infusion of general fund money and lottery money and so forth. Ultimately, you take the budgets that are voted and you divide it by the grand list and you get a tax rate. And that's what the Commissioner of Taxes did in December. And that's why there was a projected 9.4-cent increase in property taxes if the voters voted the expected 3.5% increase in education spending, and all the calculations were correct. Now, they aren't. They get modified through the process. Voters came in with a 1.5% increase in spending. The various revenue sources and expenses out of the fund have moved around a little bit. Most extraordinarily this year, an unexpected $10+ million expense in special education, which is an entitlement, and it's something that we're trying to grapple with. And I believe we did successfully. I believe the governor supports what we did in special education. And we very much hope that that will bend not only the spending curve, but also one of the things that we've seen is that while we've reduced instructional staff because we've lost students, we've had to add, I think, over 50 I will call them social services staff, psychologists, behavior specialists, and social workers, because the students are coming into our buildings presenting with problems that were unlike they were a decade or two ago. The opiate crisis is the one that's most talked about, but there are other mental health issues that students are coming to our schools with. We don't deal with them adequately in our mental health system. So schools, if they expect or hope for those students to actually learn something in schools, have to deal with these social problems for the students that are entering their buildings. But to go back to the basics is, yeah, budgets are voted and tax rates are set to fill the budgets.
Let me take two calls here, and then Commissioner Gresham, I'll come back to you. Elaine is on the line with us from Fairfax. Hi, Elaine. Go right ahead.
Hi, Jane. Thank you for taking my call. I totally support what Dave has just said. I am a longtime school board member and a retired teacher, and it is incredibly frustrating for me to continue to hear talk about how the student population, our numbers have gone down. Yes, our numbers have gone down, but the needs of our students have dramatically increased. And with the legislature making significant cuts over time to all our social service programs, it has necessitated us to add staff to meet the needs of our students. So, you know, we have, as Dave said, the opiate addiction. We have a lot of students with developmental trauma, more students with significant disabilities, and I feel that we as school boards are being incredibly responsible to meet the needs of our students, and it's those needs that drive our staffing patterns.
Elaine, thanks for the call. I appreciate that. Let's take one here from Nancy in East Hardwick. Hi, Nancy. You're on the air.
Thanks very much. And the previous caller is basically what I wanted to say, that the numbers have gone down, but the intense needs have gone up. And it's emotional, psycho, social, et cetera. Now, I personally think there's too much for local school budgets to have to finance for things that really should be financed by the Health and Human Services Department. I think there's too much of a, everybody's in their own silo, and that they're probably, I can't state an example, but duplication. If you put social workers that are and psychologists, et cetera, in the schools that are funded by the Health and Human Services, not by the education budget of a town, I think you're going to see a big difference. And I was a teacher, and it was probably simpler back then, but I can't believe how tough it has to be at this point in time for teachers to really teach. And I suggest legislators start talking to each other about this, talk to the lieutenant governor. I think he has a plan for doing this, that has
Nancy,
not.
Let me put what you're saying here to Commissioner Gresham, because, you know, this is one other way to take some of the money out of the education fund, although, you know, shifting money around from one place to another, in some senses, taxpayers are paying for it no matter which bucket it comes out of. But what about these ideas about social workers and staff who are not teachers directly but are dealing with some of the needs of modern day students?
Well, and I think the callers, you know, asked good questions and made good points. But I think it's important. It just recalls the conversation we had before the break that Representative Sharp was talking about how the education fund doesn't have a gap. The gap is filled automatically by property taxes. And I think it's important to provide some context here. So as Commissioner of Finance, my job is to manage on behalf of the governor state funds. And we have three main state funds. The general fund, which runs general government functions like the executive branch, the legislature, the judiciary, and all the various agencies and departments. And that fund, when you take out what it sends to the education fund, the general fund is $1.2 billion. The second fund we have is the transportation fund, which, as the name implies, is responsible for paving the roads and fixing the bridges and managing our transportation infrastructure. That's got about $350 million of state dollars. The education fund has $1.8 billion state dollars. So the education fund is larger than the combined general fund and transportation fund, and we don't manage it. You know, as Representative Sharp says, it manages itself. So we come in every year and we learn how much money we have to raise, what tax rate will have to be set, and how much to take from other funds. So the practical implication of that is, yes, we have needs in other areas of government. We are not, in fact, cutting funding to various social services. We are increasing funding. But could we do more? Absolutely. But
there have been areas that have seen cuts as well.
But the capacity has to be there. And the more we put into pre-K through 12 education, which is certainly a priority, no one, certainly not the governor, believes it's not a priority. But it's just enlarged relative to our other services that we need to fund. And that's why the governor has looked at it and said, how can we do this differently? And, you know, as you know, the governor is not afraid to take on difficult tasks, as we see earlier in the session. And, you know, this is clearly one task that, you know, he has said that we have to figure this out and do it differently, or else we're not going to be able to fund other parts of government.
But to the question of sort of social services in schools and how that is increasing the costs and how that might be differently funded, what do you think?
I think unquestionably the schools that I went to and my parents and grandparents went to are not the schools of today. And there has been a lot of interaction between our Agency of Education and our Agency of Human Services. There is no question that there needs to be kind of a combination of services provided.
But the governor, part of the governor's plan includes changes to the staff-student ratio. And, you know, depending on which number you're looking at, that either includes special needs or does not include special needs. But basically, it's trying to make sure that by increasing the ratio, sort of decreasing the number of staff in relation to the students, that you could find some cost savings there. So if we're seeing students with more needs, a need for more support staff, is that factored in?
Well, I'd make a couple of points. First, you know, the plan has a number of different facets to it. But one clearly is the staffing or student-staff ratio. Representative Sharp pointed out that special ed delivery and funding is part of it. And also statewide health care is part of it. But on the ratio argument issue, we've looked at other states. We've done an awful lot of work on this. And yes, it is a very challenging issue. But we know that Vermont has the lowest staff-to-student ratio in the country. We know that. And so it can't just be a factor of putting more staff at the problem. It must be a way that we are organized, and it must be a way that we can change governance and achieve scale in the schools that will get us to where we need to be. So it's not just a factor of having more people in the buildings. We have too many people in the buildings. It is a factor of looking at governance and looking at scale and changing the sizes of the districts and the various administration units we have.
Representative Sharp, do you disagree with that statement? I would suggest that a lot of those points you actually feel some agreement with. It's just in the details.
Yeah, actually, part of the reason why we're going to proceed with looking at ratios and why we have done so much work on Act 46 and special ed. To that point, you know, compared to other states. So compared to nearby states, we spend an additional $21,000 on average for each student identified needing an IEP, an individual educational plan for special education. The average in the region is $11,000. So, you know, there's money to be saved here. And we have worked diligently to do this over a number of years. I think we will see as this rolls out. However, getting from where we are to where we need to be is not something that's going to happen in a year. We've put a 5-year plan in place for transition because it's a huge practical and cultural transition to move from how we do special ed now to how we need to do it in the future to both deliver better services to our children, because we need to do that. We need to do a better job with children that need extra support. And we do it in a way that impacts taxes less. And so we think there are savings there. We think we can do a better job there, particularly with young children who aren't yet labeled with an IEP. And so, therefore, currently can't get extra funding to help those students. We believe that the system we put in place will actually help student supports get to kids in kindergarten, first, second grade, so they never need an IEP designation, so that they become successful students and go out into society well-equipped without the stigma that they get with an IEP. And so we're doing the work. We believe in the work. And I think that we do agree on the fact that we need to do better job with fewer people in our schools.
Let me get another call in here to help us layer this conversation. Charles is calling in from West Rutland. Hi, Charles. Go ahead.
Hi. How are you?
Great.
Good. I'm on the opposite end of the spectrum than the first two callers. You know, the property taxes are not only high because of the school funding, but the current use that people shelter their land in, you know, that helps to keep the property taxes high for the rest of us. And also the income sensitivity, which I guess the threshold is somewhere between $95,000 and $105,000. I mean, if you can't afford your taxes and you're making that much money, you know, my take on it and my arrogant opinion is that you're in too much of a house. My wife is a retired city school teacher, and she substituted not so long ago in a smaller district, and she had kindergarten. She had five kids with two aides. Her first year teaching, 35 to 38 years ago, whatever it was, she had 19 kindergarten kids in the morning by herself and 18 in the afternoon. And I'm not saying one is right and the other is wrong, but the staff to student ratio is certainly way out of whack. It really is. And I just have the opinion that the legislature has an insatiable appetite for money, and if you move it to the income tax like they are talking about doing, that's never going to lower my property taxes. It's never going to happen. And I'll just leave you with this. I'm probably a little more to the right than some people, but in the immortal words of Margaret Thatcher, socialism works great until the other guy runs out of money. Thank you.
Charles, I appreciate your call. Thank you for sharing it and sharing your perspective. And, you know, we really haven't chewed much over income sensitivity, and that's certainly an issue, and where the cap might be, and that's a part of the governor's plan, and other things that could be crucial to look at here. But I want to get to really the crux of things as well, and just it doesn't seem like there's really any way that your two sides are going to come together even with a few more weeks in the legislature. Are we basically headed for a veto showdown, or do the two of you in the Montpelier Bureau right now actually see a way forward where you're both going to be shaking hands in agreement sometime this month?
So I can't speak for Commissioner Gresham, but that's above my pay grade. I'm in the chair of the Education Committee. I'm not in a Money Committee, and I think it's sort of instructive here that here we are talking about education spending and the quality of education we deliver, and it's an education person from the legislature and a finance person from the administration. Seems like an odd combination.
You both know your stuff. That's at least we can say that for both of you. But so then let me push you a little bit, Representative Sharp, and make sure we come back to what you said earlier, that you think the governor's plan is a death knell for public education. I mean, that's a very strong statement.
I do. I do think that. I think PICUS associates, when they studied adequacy across the state and across the country, and said we spend about the right amount of money on education, to say that last week it was $300 million, and this morning I read, I think in Digger, that it was $400 million now that the administration is planning on taking out of education, and you know, to me, it seems to me that the administration is starting from a number. We need to get X number of dollars out, or we need to have tax weights flat, and then back into what policies might generate that number, rather than looking at our schools and saying, what's good for kids? How can we do it in a cost-effective manner, and how can we move forward? And to me, that's disturbing.
So, Commissioner Gresham, last word to you then. Do you see a way forward here, given what Representative Sharp just said?
There is a way forward, Jane, and you know, I couldn't agree less that this is a death knell for education. This plan actually is a revitalization of education, and if it were fully implemented, not only would it allow more money, not less money, to go into education, but it would realize significant savings that in fact can be reinvested in other parts of the education spectrum that right now we can't touch, like higher education, technical education, early childhood care. So this plan actually revitalizes education. It's not the death knell.
Well, I can't say that I really see a clear path to agreement, but I very much appreciate both of you sharing your perspectives and answering questions here today. We've been talking with Representative Dave Sharp, who represents Addison County and is chair of the House Committee on Education, and Commissioner Adam Gresham, who leads the Vermont Department of Finance and Management. Thanks very much to both of you.
You're welcome. Good to be here.
Thank you, Jane.
I should mention as well that tomorrow, Governor Phil Scott will join us to share his thoughts on this very topic. We'll also be talking about paid family leave, water quality efforts, and the prospect of importing prescription drugs from Canada. So stay tuned for that conversation tomorrow. You're listening to Vermont Edition.